your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Sure is. Welcome aboard, David.
Thank you very much.
What's going on, mate?
What's going on?
That weird big, that giant end of a durry in the sky that everyone's buzzing out about.
Yeah, the big black hole, so-called photograph. It isn't actually a photograph, but we'll get to that. So a black hole is a place where the gravity is so strong that if you get close enough to it, light can't even escape from it. The gravity just keeps everything close to it. You can't escape from it. So there's two types of black holes. Basically, there's the sort that is formed when a large star ends its life and it collapses, the stellar mass black holes. So they're sort of anywhere from about 20 to, say, 100 masses of the sun. So we use the solar mass as a unit. The other type, though, is called a supermassive black hole. These ones are at the center of galaxies, and they're much, much bigger. Our galaxy, the Milky Way, has a supermassive black hole, weighs about 4 million solar masses.
Whoa. Is that the result of just a really big sun or star?
Originally, we think, yes, that the beginning of the universe, stars got really big because all there was hydrogen, and they collapsed down to large black holes, and they were the progenitors to modern galaxies. And those black holes have consumed material as gravity has drawn it towards it. And they're still doing that. I mean, we've seen stars torn apart around out the supermassive black hole in our galaxy.
Will we eventually get sucked into the supermassive black hole?
Oh, yes, please.
Probably not. Our sun will have died well before then.
Well, so we'll get sucked into that hole?
But also, won't we die well before then as well?
Yeah, I think we might. Yeah.
Thank you, David.
But the one they took the photo of is of a different galaxy. It's called M87. It's 53 million light years away. Mm. Okay, so one light year is 9.5 trillion kilometres.
Okay, so carry the 4. It's a lot. It's heaps.
Yeah, well, it's the distance light travels in a year, and instead of talking in trillions, at least we're only in millions in using light years. But it's a different type of galaxy. Our galaxy is a spiral, so it's a bit like a fried egg. It's flat like a disc with a bulge in the middle. M87 is like a giant egg, so it's a little bit bigger as far as width goes of our galaxy, but it's solid. Okay, it's absolutely massive. And the black hole at the center, the supermassive black hole up there, is 6.5 billion times the mass of the sun. So that's more than 1,000 times the mass of the supermassive black hole in our galaxy. To get an idea of what they're trying to image, it's the equivalent of trying to take a photograph of an orange on the moon.
Oh, wow, okay.
Now, that's for both of them. So although our supermassive black hole is close, it's a lot smaller. Our one would fit inside the orbit of Mercury, okay? The one they took the picture of would swallow Pluto with room to spare. So it's bigger than the size of our planetary part of our solar system. So when I talk about the size of a black hole, I'm talking about that part of the black hole where light can't escape from.
Right.
So you can't take a photograph of it directly because it's black.
I understand.
Okay, so what you need is something bright behind it, so you can get.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a solar eclipse, eh? The picture that they've got.
Yeah, the photograph. But in fact, what you're seeing there is
it's a hoax. It's a hoax, isn't it?
A silhouette. What you're also seeing is it's all in radio waves. Okay, the black hole's gravity stretches light close to it. So ordinary visible light gets stretched out, the wavelengths get stretched out. So this is all in radio wavelengths. You can't see this in visible light.
So it's kind of like what we're looking at is a translation, like graphed from radio waves to a picture?
A little bit like
and
that.
And someone was like, oh, let's put a little orange in there.
To use a whole bunch of radio telescopes in North America, Europe, South America, and the South Pole.
Wow.
So those eight radio telescopes together, they were able to take the data from them and combine them so that it behaved like it was one huge telescope.
Mm. How come they did they color it in orange, or were they like, yeah, it's probably orange, or was it actually orange?
No, because again, it's radio wavelength.
So
for us to see it, it's been translated into something on an image that we can see with our eyes.
I wonder why they went with orange. Surely there's a color a bit more cosmic.
I think trying to get across the idea of heat.
Okay.
Material near the black hole is very hot.
Right.
And X-rays and so on. So they're trying to get that across in the picture. But remember, that black bit in the middle, remember, you can fit our whole solar system, including Pluto, twice.
Wow.
So it's pretty damn big.
Is that the nearest black hole to us? Is that why we're taking a picture of that particular black hole?
No, it's because it's so large. It's one of the biggest that we know about.
Right.
And although it's so incredibly far away, relatively speaking, it's reasonably close. As I said, it's about the same size as looking at the one in our galaxy, which is so much smaller.
David,
so both of them, it's like looking at the orange on the moon. So that's the reason that they've gone for it. They will be releasing a picture of, or an image of, the one in our galaxy next.
Oh, yeah.
They're working on that data. I mean, this was done in 2017.
Wow, okay, yeah. So they're muddling away on that for a long time. Yeah.
To do the data reduction. I mean, each night of observation produced for each telescope a petabyte of data. That's 1,000 terabytes per night per telescope.
Mm. Dang.
And so, like the one in the South Pole, that data was stuck there until the end of winter when the plane could fly in and get it out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and all this data, they can't send it on the internet. It's too much.
Mm.
So they literally have to put it on the FedEx plane and fly it.
Crazy.
To where there's going to be the data's going to be reduced.
What's the plan now? Just kind of have a good look at it and go, oh, look, that's how it all happened, kind of thing.
No, they can still do more with the data. And as I said, they've still got the images, the data for our own Milky Way black hole to go through. So they're still doing so. It just takes this amount of time for the data to be sorted through to get to the stage where it can be, scientific papers can be written and the public can be informed.
Sounds like some job opportunities up for grabs, actually.
Amount of time.
David, is there any, with the information gathered from these telescopes, is there any sort of speculation about what might be on the other side of a black hole?
At this stage, no. One thing it did do was to vindicate the work of a New Zealander called Roy Kerr. He's retired in Tauranga these days, but he was in UK and in America. He's a contemporary of Stephen Hawking.
Huh.
So the original idea for black hole is that you simplify it. So the first math around a black hole was it's perfectly spherical and it doesn't rotate, which is unrealistic, but you got your first approximations of the properties of a black hole from that. What Roy Kerr, the New Zealander, did was to say, okay, let's see if we can figure out what happens if it's rotating, because a black hole has to be rotating.
Yes, Roy, yes.
And he figured it out. He came up, and so this black hole they're able to show is rotating.
And now he's just hanging out in Tauranga going, shit, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great.
All right, hey, so that is a fairly in-depth coverage of black holes, which is bloody good. Now,
to the rest of space,
yeah,
real
to the other space. Now, the Israelis who had shot a spacecraft up to the moon, it's shot straight into the moon and crashed on the moon.
Well, let's not laugh at them, though.
Well, not quite. It got within 149 metres.
What?
Yeah, it was 149 metres above the surface. It was the last data, but
that's so close.
It was travelling really fast, and the engine had cut out, basically. It had cut out earlier, and they had got it going again, but it cut out again, and there was no recovery the second time. Yeah, so it would have gone crash bang and lots of pieces on the surface.
Okay, well, let's hope the moon doesn't fire back. Hey, Rocket Lab now also building satellites.
Yeah, so instead of just launching them, they're providing the full customer service.
Why not?
Yeah, so no, they'll help build satellites. They've got the launch system there. So, you know, they're going customer-centric, I think, is the buzzword these days, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Space cash.
Now, I think this is kind of an interesting story. The largest aircraft has just had its first flight, and
bigger than the Hindenburg.
What was it? I get confused between the Spruce Moose.
Well, no, but it says aircraft, not plane.
Spruce
it doesn't
Moose
say plane specifically.
And the
Sorry,
Goose. Is it Spruce Moose or Spruce Goose?
Spruce Goose.
The Spruce Goose was. I mean, that flew
it's
in 1947.
It's bigger.
Yeah.
So it's the it's the biggest plane
since
yeah.
then.
Yeah. Okay. Sweet.
Yeah, so this has got two fuselages.
I think I've seen it.
There's like two planes joined by their left and right wings in the middle,
yeah,
and they have their own wings on either side.
It's like a catamaran type plane.
Yeah, yeah, it is. So it's got six engines, three jets on each side, none in the middle. So the idea of it is that in the middle, it will carry a rocket.
Hmm.
So
oh, wow.
instead
okay.
of like Rocket Lab, they launch the rocket from the ground.
Oh, which is a quite expensive
feat,
isn't it?
Enough fuel in there to get
yeah.
it from the ground through the thick atmosphere and out to space. The idea of this one is you put the rocket under the middle wing, fly up very high into the atmosphere, and then the rocket launches from up there. So the rocket itself doesn't have to carry so much fuel.
Yeah.
Also, to launch, you just need a runway big enough for this plane to land on.
Right.
And you can launch from that runway. You don't have to launch from a specially built launch facility. Mm-hmm. So a bit more flexibility.
Interesting.
Yeah, so this was actually partly funded by one of the founders of Microsoft, whose name I... Paul Allen, that was it. Paul Allen, he died very... sadly, a few years ago, just recently, but he was the co-founder of Microsoft, and he was a big investor and supporter of this this project. So we'll see how they get on, and it might even impact Rocket Lab on you know, how many customers they get.
True, because everyone's just trying to find the cheapest way to do the thing, so it takes a few people to try it a few different ways, and then we figure it out. Kinda.
Well, there's that, but I mean, it's the flexibility side of it,
right.
And the way Rocket Lab is addressing that is they've got Mahia, but they've also almost finished building a launch facility on the east coast of America, Wallops Island. So they'll be able to launch rockets from east coast of the US and from New Zealand. The advantage in New Zealand is there's very little air traffic, so getting a launch, you don't have to wait for the traffic to die down and find a window where you can launch. It's a lot easier. So Rocket Lab should be able to get the number of launches up quite high.
Awesome, awesome. Hey, David, we should quickly get on to what's going on for the school holidays at the Stardome.
Yeah,
I'm
well,
sure
school holiday program,
stuff.
We've had 2 days of it called Alien Pursuit. So we're looking, concentrating, focusing on aliens and where we could find them. So there's activities to begin with, and demos and so on. We've got rocket launching demonstration out in the park, and then in the planetarium we've got a night sky, and then the show is actually called We Are Aliens.
Mint. Sounds like it's going to buzz some kids out. I'm into that.
Yeah, yeah. So the activities, as I said, are all focused on aliens, fun things for them to do and take away.
Autumn Stories in the Sky sounds a little bit more tame.
Well, yeah, a little more considered. that is what it says, Stories in the Sky. This is the fourth of four programs, the last of the seasons. So this is the autumn. It's narrated by Lucy Lawless and John Rhys-Davies. So that we learn a little bit about some of the
nice
constellations in autumn that's on at the moment. And at the end of the month, so we've got Celestial Navigation. It's on Tuesday, fortnight from now. So Celestial Navigation, learn about the stars and how you make your way around them. And that one, you also get a glass of wine.
That's sort of a good chance to get some knowledge, maybe impress your friends next time you're having sort of a dinner on patio kind of thing. Look up and go, oh, did you know? Look at that. Did you know that?
Well, that's a little bit of it, I guess. I mean, there are 88 astronomical constellations altogether.
Wow.
So this isn't going to go through all of them. It's just choosing some. But also some of the story behind them. So,
cool.
You know, the way that the Greek stories went in a little more detail and some of the drama associated with them, but also the astronomical perspective.
Right on. And just a little heads up for anybody that likes to have their heads up, Matariki is hidden for 6 weeks?
Yeah, Matariki, we've been gradually watching it get lower and lower in the western sky after sunset. Of course, the sun is setting a little earlier each day as nights get longer and days get shorter. So as the Earth goes around the sun's going to go in front of Matariki. It's almost there now. I mean, if you're very quick after sunset and you've got a good low horizon, you could just catch it. But basically, it's a bit hard. For the next 6 weeks, it'll be hidden by the sun, and then we'll look for it in the morning sky, the beginning of June. That's when the Matariki Festival, the Maori New Year, is held. So the rising Matariki star cluster in the morning in June is what is looked for to herald the beginning of that Maori New Year.
Fantastic. Hey, well, thank you very much, David. We will check in with you in a fortnight. And, hey, have a great school holidays there at the Stardome.
Well, thank you very much. And you got my email about the April Fool's story last time.
Yes, we did.
No, we enjoyed that.
Did you pass that on to the listeners at all?
Yeah, I think we just did that later on in the show.
Oh, good. Yeah.
No, it was, look, I feel like
it was a very convincing story, I have to say.
It was.
It's a massive waste of time, April Fool's, really, isn't it?
Well, that's what April Fool's about, I'm sure.
Hey, thanks, mate. We'll catch you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, then. See ya.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.